We're back.
So it's been a while, right? Yeah, it's been a while. Whose fault is it? It's his fault. He's been unavailable to me, both emotionally and romantically.
Just closing myself off completely.
So it's his fault that it's been like 2 months. But Texas is also back.
We're going to
get into all of that. I think the first thing we have to talk about, though, is the most relevant news, and that is the college football playoff.
Yeah.
So we got our four: Michigan, Washington, Texas, Alabama. Florida State didn't make it as an undefeated Power 5 champ.
Unprecedented.
I never thought we'd get here unless it was
five. But I didn't even think that
undefeated
was
Power 5 conference champ. It would have been tough.
Right.
Right. You could have had it if like
Georgia had beaten Alabama.
If Georgia had beaten Alabama and Texas didn't lose to Oklahoma. Like, this was the year that we could have seen it. And we actually got really close. It was two games. Literally two games. You changed the outcome, and we have five. And in which case, I would have been perfectly okay with leaving Florida State out.
Right.
Because at that point, they have the worst strength of the schedule, too, so there's a legitimate argument there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're 13-0 Power 5 champ, and 2-1 loss. Yes, they're Power 5 champs, but get in over them.
Unbelievable. So many different ways to just talk about how crazy this was. First of all, FSU, the kind of like prevailing argument was like, oh, well, they just played in the ACC. They didn't play a tough schedule. All right, sorry, you get left out. Like, a lot of Group of Fives has been undefeated. Same sort of deal. No, it's not. They played LSU on a neutral site and kicked the you-know-what out of them.
Yeah.
And then played Florida at the end of the season, which, you know, at the beginning of the season, how are they supposed to know? So the point is,
well, they play Florida every year, so it's on Florida for not holding up their end of the bargain.
5-7 Florida at Florida. But the point being, when two of your, three, I think is how many they, or I guess I think they might play four.
They played three.
Non-conference?
I think. I don't know how many games. The ACC might be eight. I know they played Southern Miss and they played North Alabama.
But when two of your four non-conference games are against Power 5 opponents, like, it's really hard to ask any more of the scheduling. They also had to go at Clemson, which actually turned out to be a better one than people might have thought midway through the season, 8-4 in the top 25. And you know what?
They beat Miami, who beat the crap out of Texas A&M.
Yep. And then went into the ACC championship game and beat a top 10, top 15 opponent by two scores. And, you know, the funny thing is, cutting ahead a little bit, but I saw a report from Heather Dinich, and I just want to talk about this because I hadn't seen too many people talk about it, was the big opinion swear from the committee was watching the first half with Florida State.
Yeah, I just read the article.
And seeing that offense wasn't as productive as maybe they had thought it could be without their quarterback. Breaking news, Tate Rodemaker would have come back.
And if you watched
the Florida game, the offense could move the ball. Like, it wasn't like the Louisville game.
It took them a little bit to get going.
But once they did get going. And by the way, you know, you don't think a month's worth of practices helps Tate Rodemaker with the first team for the first time probably in his career? You don't think that helps at all?
Or the fact that they actually have better weapons than Alabama does?
Oh, for sure, without a doubt. I would say as good of weapons as almost anybody except for Ohio State. I really believe that. And
get your feet off the table. What are we doing?
That was embarrassing. But really what it all boiled down to was kind of the pool of people that said five best teams and then five most deserving, and apparently in the bylaws, right, five best, whatever that means. And so Florida State got left out.
It's such a subjective term.
And the immediate takeaway I always have when people say five best teams is, what does that mean? Four best teams.
We can go to five this year. I don't know how that would work, but sure, let's do it.
Round robin, I guess. Four best teams. What does that even mean? That's what I always don't get. Because if it's power rankings or what Vegas would think or my opinion, guess what? My opinion was Oregon was much better than Washington going into conference championship week. I was wrong. I have a guess. I have what I think is going to happen, who I think is going to win of the four best teams. But guess what? I've been wrong a million times in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be wrong a million times again because my opinion, when it's backed by nothing, means nothing.
Yes.
And by the way, if we're only basing this off of who we think are the best, I want every committee to prove to me that they've been watching every single one of the games that Florida State has played, every single one of the games that Texas has played, every single one of the games that Alabama has played. Because if it's just who's the best team right now, we don't really care at all what happened in the Alabama-South Florida game.
Yep.
We don't care at all even what happened in the Alabama-Auburn game, just because we saw Alabama's potential in the Georgia game. People are casting that game aside. We can get into more of that later, but fourth and goal from the 26 to save the season. So, you know, the whole best team argument, it just makes no sense at the end of the day because, you know, like, truthfully, and I know you made this argument 10 times out of 10, my best guess is the best four teams in the country are some mix of, you know, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, and Ohio State.
Yeah.
Cast aside Washington, who's a really good team, but it's like, you know, if it's based off of Vegas, the four probably Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah, so it's
some mix of that.
It depends on obviously what power ranking you're looking at, but Vegas has their odds and has their own power ranking who would be favored on a neutral field. You look at SP Plus, it goes Michigan, it goes, I think it was Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State.
Wow.
That was the top four.
Wow.
You look at ESPN's FPI, it went Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon.
Wow.
Like, we're talking about the four best teams as if we know definitively who the four best teams are. And we don't. And so,
why we play the games, by the way.
Exactly. What do you do to supplement the thought of, oh, this team's the best? Well, you look at the on-field result. You look at, okay, who won, who lost when these two teams played. And at the end of the day, Florida State won every single game. Yes, you can say that Alabama scheduling Texas, great on them. They shouldn't be penalized for losing an tough out-of-conference game. I argue they should, right? It's a game on your schedule. You have to win that game. You lost that game. I don't care if you ended up winning the SEC championship. The problem is that they lost to Texas, and Texas ended up winning the Big 12. If Texas wasn't the team that won the Big 12, there wouldn't be this huge argument. The problem was they couldn't put Alabama in without putting in Texas. And that's really where the crux of the argument is like, because Texas essentially had the head-to-head over the SEC, like the only way to put an SEC team in was to screw Florida State. That was literally the only way they were going to be able to do that. And to me, what the committee said with the Final Four is that the result of the game doesn't actually matter. And why do I say that? Well, they basically are saying that an injury is more important than winning all of your games. They were playing God in this situation. They were saying, well, we don't think you can compete on you know the same field without your starting quarterback, and so therefore we're not going to put you in. That's not their job. Their job is to watch the games that have happened, look at the results, and put in the four. And I don't like the four, like you said, I don't like the four best teams. Like, saying that from the jump was the stupidest thing that the committee and Bill Hancock, the president of the selection committee, could have done. And he doubled down on that before the championship weekend. And basically what they're saying is that, you know, the games don't matter as much as they should. And I know a lot of people are worried that the 12-team playoff is going to devalue the regular season. Well, it's okay because it's already devalued. Like, the fact that you can win every single one of your games and still, as in a Power 5 conference, this isn't even Group of 5 talk at this point. This is a Power 5 conference. Their strength of schedule was in the top half of college football. So we're not talking about...
It really wasn't that bad. You know what I mean?
They were 55th. Like, let's not act like this was, you know, Liberty playing 133. Like, this was still a legitimate schedule. It might not have been Washington's, you know, fifth overall strength of schedule or whatever it was, but it was still top half in college football. And we're just going to penalize them because their quarterback suffered a freak injury that he broke his fucking leg.
Yeah.
We're going to say, hey, actually, because your quarterback did this, you don't make it. Sorry. Goodbye. It basically tells me that an injury is more important than the games on the actual field. And I just can't believe we've come to that in college football. I just can't.
It was literally the complete destructive of objective reasoning for the selective use of subjective. We don't think your team's very good because you're starting quarterback.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it was. They completely cast aside any sort of objective, okay, well, they had this result, they had that result, and just completely focused on the subjective. And if that's the way you want to do it, it is what it is. Not the way I would have done it, but
my top four would have been Michigan, Washington, Florida State, Texas. And because a bunch of people were coming at me for saying that Alabama shouldn't be in because me as a Michigan fan wanted to play Florida State. I think Florida State should have been three. I don't even think it should have been a discussion. They were an undefeated Power 5 champ. They were the worst of the three of Michigan, Washington, and Florida State. They were the worst of the three. It doesn't matter. They still should have been number three, and it should have been Michigan, Texas, Washington, Florida State. And you can say, oh, well, that gives Washington as the two seed an unfair, you know, first round. I don't care. Right. Like, the games on the results of the games have to matter. They absolutely have to. If we wanted to do the best four teams, what are we doing playing the games? Just ask Vegas at the start of the season who they would have in their playoff and then play a 14 playoff from there. Like, there's no point in playing the games. And for the people that, you know, are talking about the devalue of the regular season, well, I'm glad we're going to 12 now, because I would rather, and I know this is where I disagree with like some people like Josh Pate, who says he's okay with somebody getting screwed for the 14 playoff. I don't agree with that. Like college football is literally the only sport in the world where we say, hey, we actually aren't going to settle this on the field. It's going to be settled in a room, a boardroom full of people who probably don't watch, you know, half of the games. Yeah. It's
hard
just,
to, by the way.
I watch a lot of college football. I don't watch every single. It's just ludicrous that we're just okay with an undefeated team not being able to play for a national championship. And people are advocating for it. It boggles my mind that this is what it's, and that was the problem with the BCS. It was like, right. Yeah, like, so here's the iterations of college football. You have the pre-BCS era. It was like, yeah, we're okay with writers and coaches deciding who the national championship was, and if they differed, we had co-national champions.
Yeah, often.
A lot. And so it was like, okay, we have some years there was literally like three. There were three national champions because there was like the USA Today poll.
Right.
And the team was like, oh, we're first in that one. Yeah, we're going to take that. We're going to use that as national champion. BCS comes along. You get to the point where, okay, well, we have, you know, so it might not be every single year, but we have so many years where we have X amount of undefeated teams, but we're only going to take the top two.
Yes.
We're only going to take the top two for the national championship purpose. It's like, huh? How does that make sense? Like Boise State, and I know it's kind of a weird thing to pull, but Boise State in the mid 2000s was one of the best programs in college football. Mm-hmm. And how many times did they get to compete for a national championship? Goose egg. Not a single time. We're talking about literally Kellen Moore being, I think he's the all-time wins leader
right.
for quarterbacks, and they didn't get a single shot at the national championship. And I get that they were a group of five at that point. I don't know what you would call them, but they weren't, you know, one of the big boys at the table. They were playing in the WAC. I mean,
yeah,
outside of like what TCU and Utah for a little bit, like that conference wasn't, you know, insane. But then they play Oklahoma. They beat Oklahoma. They showed that they could be, you know, they could play on that at that level, and were never rewarded for it. Not a single time. And then you get to the college football playoff era, and it hasn't happened a ton. Really, this is the first year, but it was always a possibility because the criteria, not really the criteria, but the way it was set up is that there's five Power 5 conferences, obviously, Power 5 conferences. There's only four spots, so somebody was going to get screwed eventually. I just didn't think it would be at the point where it was an undefeated conference champ for two one-loss conference champs. I just didn't think that would be, you know, the way that a team got screwed. Like, to me, I'm okay if it's a one-loss team getting screwed because you lost a game. You could have changed that outcome. For Florida State, there was literally nothing else they could have done except score a billion points on teams because it really is a style. It's a style competition at this point. Like, and next year, because we're going to 12, I don't know how much it matters. But like, if we were staying at four and I was a head coach of a football team, I would try to run up the score on every single team I played so that it was like, oh, look at this team scored, you know, 75 points in this game. This team scored 65 in this game. And it was like, and it's like, that shouldn't be how we determine, you know, who gets in and who doesn't get in. Like, I'm sorry that, you know, FSU's defense was playing at a top three level and that wasn't good enough for you. Like, right. Had Iowa been undefeated, which would have been wild. Had Iowa been undefeated and won the Big Ten and did it 13-10 over Michigan, are they in or are they out?
Right.
Because it wasn't pretty the way they did it. I mean, they lost a 13-10 game to Nebraska. Or not Nebraska. It was Minnesota.
Yeah, it was 13-12 or something like
they
that.
They lost to Minnesota because Cooper DeJean got absolutely hosed on a fake, what was it, a fake fair catch. Yeah. Got absolutely hosed. Should have won that game. And then who was the other team? Penn State. They lost 31-0. So that was kind of tough. But not a lot they could have done in that game. But like that's my point is, if it's a style competition, then automatically you're going to lean the way of offenses. And so if a team is predominantly defensive in the way that Florida State was,
nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's about winning games, is it not? I thought Booger McFarland did a fantastic job. After the rankings were, he basically said that, you know, this is bad for college football. You know, the results are decided on the field. And I'll say this, ESPN has been, I don't know if a media group has been downgraded more in my eyes than ESPN, like ever than ESPN this year. And a lot of that has to do with their reporting of the Michigan stuff, which, We stopped before that was even a thing.
Yeah.
Wild that all that has transpired since we've been gone. But the fact that you have Kirk Herbstreit and Dan Orlovsky and what's the other guy's name? Shoot. I'm not going to remember his name. The black guy.
Lewis Riddick?
No, it's not Lewis. It's Joey Frank Galloway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like they were like Kirk and Dan Orlovsky literally have clips of them saying that Florida State all like it was after Washington jumped to four.
Right.
And so the top four was Georgia, Michigan or Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Washington. That was the top four and Florida State was at five then. Well, Kirk says, just win out. Why are you worried about this? Just win out. Just win all your games and you'll be in. You know, win right. every single one of your games. Win out, you're in. Dan Orlovsky said the same exact thing. And then it comes to championship weekend, and they're getting out of in front of it. Like, this is, you know, Jordan Travis gets hurt against North Alabama, and they play Florida with Tate Rodemaker. You don't really hear anything about it. And after that game, it's like somebody from the higher ups in ESPN was like, we got to push this narrative because you heard Finebaum say it. And Finebaum is just a mouthpiece for the ESPN suits.
SEC.
It is. Disgusting. Paul Finebaum has zero journalistic integrity. Zero. It is disgusting. And I was like, okay, something's happening because on every, like Stephen A. Smith too, it was like every single, you know, show ESPN had was talking about it. And there was just the anti-FSU agenda.
I forgot about Stephen A., but yeah.
And the anti-FSU agenda was being pushed much more. Like you heard some guys like Greeny, I know, was on the side of Florida State, you know, RG3 was also on that side. And what really got me though was Reese Davis.
Oh.
When Reese Davis did it, I was like, okay, something's wrong here because this is essentially ESPN because they own the rights to the college football playoff at this point. Like they basically make all of the decisions. They were like, "Oh no, we just want a better game. We want a better game." And we think the whole thing was we think Michigan Alabama will be better than Michigan Florida State or Washington Florida State. That was essentially what it was. And because there's no split broadcast like there are in the NFL, which I think they do a great job of, and Joel Klatt's brought this up many a times, it forces those channels and those like ABC, CBS, NBC and Fox, it forces them to promote the other media companies because they are also broadcasting the same thing. And then every 4 years or 3 years, it rotates who gets to do the Super Bowl. And so mutual benefit in promoting each other. In college football, there's not. Mm-mm. From this point on, ESPN owns essentially the entire bowl season. Like CBS has like a couple of games. I don't think Fox has a single one.
The Holiday Bowl is, and I think that's
it. So basically, we're like, okay, ESPN, we'll just listen to you. Like they do the ranking show every Tuesday night. It's like, who controls? Oh, ESPN controls that. Oh, that's interesting. And so I don't know. I'm not going to get into the huge conspiracy of it, but like. Would you be absolutely stupid and naive to just accept without question that there might not have been anything shady going on? Yeah, I think you would. Like It might not be, you know, a full blown conspiracy theory that, you know, from the top down, ESPN and the SEC, you know, colluded to essentially get this team in and with the College Football Playoff Committee. But you can't tell me that there wasn't something, you know, like ESPN has a vested interest in getting the quote unquote best four teams.
Yes.
And there's a reason why they were pushing that so much.
I absolutely think, I mean, I don't know. I think like, there's probably a reason why Herb Street won in Michigan, Alabama instead of Michigan, Florida State. At least selfishly, he wants to call, you know,
he
the
said
best
that.
Game.
No, I think he right. said that.
Yeah. Like, you know, he wants to call the best game possible. And, you know, you can't blame him for that, I guess. But in another sense, it's like you're also like up there being an analyst.
Yeah, exactly. Like there was zero analysis.
And he's covered.
Zero.
Yeah, and that was the thing. It was like if anybody ever tried to bring up like, hey, guys, like Florida State went out of their way to schedule like a really tough team in non-conference. And you know what? They won at Clemson and they did all these things. And oh, yeah, they're undefeated. And then immediately you would have somebody else. No, no, but it's not that. It's the best four teams. It's the best four teams. What does that mean? It's the teams I think are the best four. Okay.
And the crazy thing about that was I saw basically everybody pushing. It was Michigan, Texas, Alabama, Georgia. Now, why were they doing that? Well, because Texas beat Alabama.
Right.
That's the only reason that they were doing that.
Yep.
If they played again tomorrow, who would be favored? Alabama would be favored. True. Alabama would be favored over Texas, yep. Which is wild to me because people are saying this. And I'm like, okay, if you, the fans that were saying, oh, they got it right because they got the best four teams, say, you're wrong.
Right.
Like Texas and Washington are not the best four teams. Mm-mm. I would argue that most power ratings wouldn't have Washington in the top 10.
Right.
Most power ratings have Texas like 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you really wanted the best four teams, okay, well, let's just watch the Big Ten semifinal versus the SEC semifinal.
Yeah.
Let's just put Michigan, Ohio State, and Texas or Georgia, Alabama, and then the winners get to play each other in the national championship. Let's just do that.
Right.
Oh, well, we've already seen those. I don't give a shit. That's what you wanted. That's what you freaking wanted. No, but like the real problem is the committee has never been consistent. That has been the biggest thing is like, the inconsistencies within the committee because they're people and they're stupid and they don't actually care about the sport. And a lot of, which is crazy because a lot of them are like athletic directors and former players and coaches, but like they clearly don't care about the sport in the way that they should because this was disgusting because you see the top four and it's like, okay, fine, whatever. They're going with their quote unquote best four teams. And I don't know how we determined Washington was the best four team. Like, if you think Washington is one of the best four teams, it's clearly because they won the Pac-12 championship.
Right.
Like, the result on the field mattered for Washington, but it didn't for Florida State. Florida State over Georgia. What are we doing there?
Yeah.
Like, Florida State, realistically, should have been like 8.
Oh, absolutely. That was stunning to me because I think Heather Dinich came out with the story, and I don't know if she had Florida State at 6 or not. But anyway, but I always thought that. I mean, if it was going to be, like, I always thought if Florida was going to get, I knew it as soon as Texas came up at 3. But
yes.
Mm-hmm. Is if Florida State was going to get passed up by one-loss conference champion, they would get passed up by all the one-loss teams,
yep.
Regardless. Like, Georgia is a four, like, we literally see it right now. They are a 14-point favorite on a neutral yep. field. Florida State has one transfer, by the way, one. So this is almost exclusively the same team. And they're a 14-point favorite, Georgia is, on a neutral yep. site. And not well, and it's in Miami, Florida, so you would think that Florida State would have, it's pretty unbelievable.
FSU is dogs, too. Obviously, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon.
For sure.
And that's not even a question. And then I'd also think they'd be a dog to Penn State.
Yep.
They'd probably be a dog to Oklahoma.
Right.
Like, they'd probably be a dog to Missouri, if we're yep. being honest. Like, that's where the inconsistency comes in. It's like, they only put Florida State at 5 because they wanted to feel good about themselves. They're like, oh, well, they only missed it by one spot. It's not like we totally killed. And you know, after the week after Jordan Travis gets hurt. So, after the North Alabama game, on that Tuesday, Florida State is still... I think they were, because that would have been the week before rivalry week. So they were 5, I think. And then after Ohio State loses, they jump up to 3.
Yeah.
Or jump up to 4, I think is what it was.
Weren't they 3, I think?
Were they 3?
It was
Georgia, Michigan, Washington, Florida State,
okay.
Wasn't it?
Okay.
So they, after the Florida game, they're like, oh, yeah, you can be 4. Yeah, absolutely. And all they did was go and beat a top 15 team.
Right,
like, and they got penalized for it.
Yep.
And it was like, I don't know how much sense this makes. And another thing I wanted to touch on, because I saw a lot of SEC people putting this out on Twitter, and it was, and the SEC, fuck, the propaganda machine is just, honestly, if you want to see what college football is as at its core, it's the SEC. It's a bunch of fans of middling teams like Mississippi State and South Carolina and Kentucky saying, oh, well, the SEC is better, because they want to feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. They want to feel good about going 6-6 every single year because they're playing, you know, Alabama and Georgia and LSU maybe. But what was really eye-opening to me was that, and we've talked about this, Tennessee being ranked at 21 or 20, whatever it was, but like Utah and Kansas not being ranked was like, how is this possible?
Right.
Like, we're talking about Utah 8-4 has a win over a common opponent in which Tennessee lost to in Florida. And we're also talking about Kansas, who has literally the same resume as Tennessee. Tennessee had zero good wins this season.
Zero.
Literally zero.
And a bad loss.
And a very bad loss to fucking Florida.
Yeah.
And yet Tennessee was able to stay ranked the entire year. Meanwhile, Utah and Kansas weren't. And so I saw the SEC people touting top 25 wins, ranked wins. And it's like, you can't count Tennessee. Like, Tennessee is not, if Utah and Kansas aren't ranked wins, then Tennessee's not a ranked win.
Absolutely.
And that's, I think, the bigger issue with ranked wins is that we have put an arbitrary just line in the sand at 25, because that's kind of what we've always done in college football. Never really made sense. Yeah. It was like, okay, we want the top 25. And so if you're 25, if the team you beat is 25, you get a ranked win. But if the team is 26, it's not a ranked win.
Right. Even if the team at 26 is probably
better than the team at 25. And it's like okay, I don't really know, you know, what we're doing here. And last point on this, I've seen some people use this as logic for or some hypocrisy for the Alabama FSU thing, and it absolutely is. They put Liberty over SMU for the New Year's Six Group of Five bid. It's like SMU is 100% better than Liberty, but Liberty went undefeated, so they get it. Like, how does that make sense?
Totally the opposite.
It doesn't. That's how it makes sense. It doesn't. And I saw a lot of Florida State fans saying that Jordan Travis should be the Heisman, because if he means that much to his team, then he should be the Heisman. It's like, you know what? Yeah, sure.
It's a good way of thinking about it.
I'll absolutely take that. Okay. Yeah, it was 27 minutes on the college football playoff. I think we needed to do that. I needed to get some of that off my chest.
Absolutely.
And you know, I think, you know, the casual fans are, oh, this is the best four play. No. I think that's kind of, you know, the reason that my faith in the sport is fading a little bit. I will always love college football because of you know, the Saturdays, the games, but the direction it's going, where the TV executives are making decisions for the casual fan when, you know, there's really no need to. Like, college football, the fan base is really strong, and we're a bunch of, like, we're rabid fans.
Right.
Like, I saw a bunch of casual fans, like, and I'm gonna call one out. I know he's listening. I know he's listening. I have a friend, Grayson, our mutual friend Grayson. He said that he is a self-proclaimed NFL guy.
Okay.
He's a self-proclaimed NFL guy. And he said, I don't care, I just want to see good games. And I'm like, oh, well, great. I'm glad you just want to see good games as an NFL guy.
This works for you. Cool. Calls up the committee. I like it.
Yeah.
Good work.
So it's like we need to stop making decisions for the casual. I going to 12 is a good thing. Like, we won't have this happen again. And if we have, you know, the 12 and 13 teams, you know, arguing with each other, I don't care. You should have won more games. Like,
yeah. Interestingly, this year would have been like very tight, because it was tight for the New Year's Six. Like, mm-hmm. Ole Miss versus Oklahoma would have been the big one. And up until like the last second, a lot of people had Oklahoma over Ole Miss. But in the end, Ole Miss like squeaked in there.
You want to know why?
SEC. But we'll see. Do we want to talk any about the New Year's Six games, or
I don't care about them. Like, at this point, I don't care about the bowl games. Like, after watching Purdue in the Citrus Bowl, I'm like, what is the point of this anymore? We are seeing Purdue's like practice squad,
right,
walk-ons play against a full strength LSU team.
I think we saw some of it yesterday. It was like
disgusting.
Like, a lot of the times, if you get into the college football playoff, you really keep your roster together.
And actually, that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, from what I saw, there was, I think, one transfer from the four teams.
No, Alabama's had a couple guys enter since you left. Texas has had a couple guys enter. Washington's had a couple guys enter. Michigan is the only team in Power 5 to not have a guy enter so far.
Wow. Anyway, but beyond that, like, Ohio State is at how many, 11,
if not more? Yeah, I think it was 11 last I saw.
It's kind of just like opening up the floodplain if you don't make that CFP.
Exactly. So you have 11 guys who are transferring out, and that's not even counting the guys who aren't going to play in the game because of the draft. Outs.
Right. Yeah.
And I do think that Marvin Harrison Jr. will play. If I'm Travion Henderson, because of how injured he is, right, I'm not playing in that game. Yep. Like, I'm just not. So I think Ohio State, I don't know.
They don't have their starting quarterback. How crazy is
that? No, it'll be Devin Brown probably, right?
Yep.
Like, it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And I think this is a bigger problem with college football as a whole. And I was talking to a couple of our buddies about it last night. I think that the whole college football schedule is just wrong. There should not be an early signing day in December. So the early signing day is December 20th. The actual signing day is February 7th.
Right.
The whole reason it was put in place is so that kids can get enrolled, you know, in their schools early and then be there for practice in the spring, which is fine. But what they've done by doing that is made it so that coaches have to be hired immediately after the season in order to make up whatever ground they lost on the recruiting trail.
Right.
Like, so that's why we see Willie Fritz won't be coaching Tulane in their bowl game because he's at Houston now. Jonathan Smith won't be he knew he was gone before they played Oregon.
Right.
Like, yeah. And I think I heard that the Willie Fritz news came out during stretches, during warm-ups.
Or Jonathan Smith?
No. The Willie Fritz news, like the actual news was leaked during warm-ups of the AAC SMU championship
That's
game.
That's insane.
What are we doing? So I think the best way to kind of supplement this is the transfer portal has to be moved to after the season. Like, that is number one. Like, we can't be doing the transfer portal right after the regular season ends because
coaches
also, for the same reason, need to be in their new spot so that they can start picking guys out of the portal. So what needs to happen is, and I've kind of laid out this plan, and hopefully, like, this is going to be tough to do because of the NFL, but what should happen is you have championship weekend this past weekend. Then you play Army-Navy, that's its own weekend, it gets its own game. It always should, always will. So they play this upcoming weekend. And then we should start the college football playoff.
Right.
Right after that, because we're going to 12 next year especially, it should start right then, right there. And then you sprinkle bowl games throughout the week so that, you know, people can still get their fix of college football in between these massive games.
Is the
right?
plan to still play the non-New Year's Six that get, you know what I mean, that are the semifinal games? Okay.
Wait, what?
Like outside of the 12?
No, those will be in the 12. So the first round will be neutral site games. And then it'll go to the eight. It'll go to eight teams, and so you'll have four of them. And then the semifinal will be the two that are left, and it'll be a rotation.
That makes sense.
Really, all those are for now is for advertising and location of the bowl game.
Right.
Like, that's all it is at this point. So I honestly... Well, and I'll touch on this in a little bit, but so I think you play it, so it would be the 15th or the 16th would be the college football playoff. The first round would start right then. And the reason why I say this could be some trouble with the NFL is because I found out on Black Friday that the NFL cannot play a game in a location that within 75 miles of a high school football game or a college football game.
Is that right?
Yes.
75 miles?
75 miles, which is why they had to pick Miami. Like, their options were limited for who they could have in that Friday, in that Black Friday Amazon Prime game.
Wow. So they had to do Jets.
So they had to do Jets Miami because there wasn't anything happening within 75 miles. And
why?
So it was a rule put in place, I think, like this. It was in the like mid to late 1900s. I can't remember the actual year. But Congress was like, yeah, you can't do that.
Wow.
So
explains why, like, this year they're not playing any New Year's Eve games. They're playing
playing it on Monday because they don't want to interfere with NFL Sunday, which that I understand. Yep. I get not playing games on Sunday, whatever. So they play the first round games. Then you play the second round games right after that. You play what would be the semifinal after that. And then the championship the week after. I don't think we need to buy.
And that would get us up pretty much to the timeline. That
would exactly. We would be like right at the end of the year. Yep. I think the championship game
would be played on the 8th.
Would it be played on the 8th?
Yeah, if you gave them a week off, because it would be start on the 16th.
Well, I wouldn't give them a week off.
I mean, after, didn't you say Army-Navy is...
Yeah, so it'd be 16th. It would be... Yeah, I guess it would, right?
Yeah, it would match up perfectly pretty much.
And so you do that instead of pushing the season further back. Because when's the national championship game getting played now?
This year it's getting played on the 8th.
Well, no, like next year, I mean, in terms of the 12 team.
I don't know what they're doing. I hope they're doing that. I mean,
they're not. No, I know it's getting pushed back. Like, they're starting it at the same time. Yeah, because these bowl games have to be played. They're the New Year's Six, so they got to be played, which I just completely disagree with. And so that way, you could open the transfer portal. Like, you're not losing. You could open the transfer portal then. If you want to move up signing day from February 7th to the middle of January, or, you know, the actual end of the season, fine, do that. Doesn't need to be in the middle of February, but you can't have an early signing day.
Yeah.
So that solves all of our problems with coaching for the most. Maybe not all of them, but like, you'll have your coaches for the bowl games.
Right.
If you start like the first bowl game is the 16th. I know we're literally the first. Ohio's the very first bowl game this season. You start at the 16th, and so you start the day with a couple, you know, mid tier bowl games, and then you play the college football playoff game. So there'd be four of them, right? Yeah, there would be four games. So you have your little appetizer, and then you like stagger the other four games, and then you wouldn't have all the issues with opt outs, and you might still have opt outs, but you won't have the issues with guys transferring out and whatnot. But I don't know if there's any coming back from it at this point.
It's the game's changing for sure. I mean. Yeah, especially if you don't make that playoff. I mean, that's really the thing. I think so often it's like, I mean, like, I don't know. I maybe I'm wrong, but I think it would have been different for, like, you just, I don't know if McCord enters the transfer portal after the, you know, as soon as Ohio State finds out they don't make the playoff. Yeah. I think the Cotton Bowl was sort of a game, like, and, you know, I'll say this, Joe Klatt said this, if it was, you know, kind of like the way back in the day before BCS era, and it was just bowl games, and you had Michigan and Washington in the Rose Bowl, mm-hmm. and you had Florida State and Georgia in the Orange Bowl, you could have Ohio State and Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. You know, imagine all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Texas versus Washington, or not Washington, but whoever. And
Penn State,
Cotton,
maybe?
Yeah, Texas, Penn State, and the Cotton, or Sugar, whatever. And, you have all these great games, and then you could have, you know, a Michigan or Washington claim a national championship if they win. Florida State would obviously still claim it if they won. And then you could probably still have Alabama, Ohio State at full power in the Sugar Bowl in a great game. And sometimes, you know, for that 5 through 12, when you have some really great teams, which often we haven't, right? Yeah. I mean, we've had three great teams and then a bunch of kind of middling. When you have these 5-12 that are great teams, you kind of love to see them at their full strength, but that's not the luxury we have. Like you said, partially because of the timeline, partially because of, you know, I think the expansion from 2 to 4 has increased that a little bit, of like the whole term of like meaningless and stuff like that. And I think that's partially the factor, but
I think the real issue is,
I agree
with you. Well, no, I think that the real issue is that spring practice, there's so much meaning for some of these freshmen to get in there for spring practice, because they're missing out on, you know, a lot of key development and learning the playbook, when it used to just be get there in the summer and be there for summer workouts. And so that's why you have the early signing period and whatnot, so that they can get enrolled early and be there for spring practice. And it's like, well, if you just didn't have, like, if you just had spring practice with, you know, the regular guys, you know, that are on the team currently and none of the freshmen, I don't know, like, is the product that much different on the field come the fall? I don't think so.
Right.
And it would take care of a lot of the issues that we have right now with guys opting out and transferring so quickly. But I also think that a lot of it has to do with that we have a bunch of knuckleheads running the sport. You know, the NCAA should not be, you know, in charge of such a big entity. And in my opinion, neither should the conferences. Like, I think that the conferences have too much power right now. And we're seeing that with the SEC. We're seeing that with the Big Ten. The ability for them to negotiate their own contracts, which was a great thing when it happened in the 1980s with that Supreme Court case, you know, Oklahoma versus Board of the Board of Regents, or Oklahoma Board of Regents versus the NCAA. Like, it was a great thing that happened then because it wasn't just, you know, the same five teams that were being nationally broadcast. You know, you were able to get variety after that. The problem is the Pac-12 died because of it. The ACC is going to die because of it. And you know, some of that's because of the conferences. A lot of it's because of the TV execs, right? You know, they're willing to drop $1 billion on the Big Ten, but you know, $500 million is too much for the Pac-12.
Right.
It's ludicrous. Okay, let's talk about rivalry week a little bit.
Missed out on that.
We did miss out on that. We missed out on a lot of things. Actually, should we talk about the Michigan thing first?
Sure. Yeah.
So what? This was back before the Michigan State game. There was a report that came out of the whole sign stealing thing. And the it was really about the, you know, use of advanced technology of taping the sidelines, which
advanced scouting
to me this whole thing has been blown out of proportion. Like, and we're seeing it right now because people say it gives you a competitive advantage. I'll touch on that in a second. I'll tell you what really gives a team a competitive advantage. Being able to, you know, drop $1.5 million on a quarterback before he's even in the portal.
Right.
Essentially legal tampering to be their quarterback next year. And there was a bunch of teams that have done that so far. Like Cameron Ward, before he had, before the December 4th period opened for him, was already getting seven-figure offers from 11 schools before the portal even opened. It's like, oh, you're telling me that the actual players on the field aren't, you know, more valuable than, you know. Okay, so there's that. But really what I want to get into is the whole Connor Stallions thing. And it's like, so he bought the tickets under his own name, transferred them to somebody else, and asked them to film the opposing sideline. To me, everybody has access to an iPhone.
Right.
I don't understand how this is advanced technology anymore. A rule that was written in 1994 so that schools like South Alabama and, you know, Boise State didn't have to spend money on another employee to go and videotape, you know, go to these games and videotape. Well, that rule was written in 1994. They talked about getting rid of it in 2021. And we're all just sitting here like, oh, yeah, iPhones are advanced technology. Brother, my grandma has an iPhone. How is that advanced technology? Like, I don't get it. To me, like, it was really just something to grasp on, you know, for Michigan State and Ohio State fans to be like, oh, no, the past 2 years don't matter. No, you got your ass kicked. Like you just did, right?
And then the week after, Michigan won that game 49-0.
It was just and you know, that was without their supposed sign guy.
Right.
And so what happens is Jim Harbaugh gets suspended three games because it was a program suspension. It wasn't a Jim Harbaugh suspension. It was somebody had to be punished in the program per Tony Petitti in the Big Ten, even though he made an unprecedented decision by doing that. He made that decision, and Jim Harbaugh, you know, is suspended for three games, and Sherrone Moore steps in as the interim head coach. So we're throwing due process out. Jim Harbaugh, based off the information we have, didn't know anything about it. This was really Connor Stallions and, you know, his manifesto, just crazed brain, doing this on his own. And to me, it's kind of like a witch hunt. Like it's a lot less serious than people made it out to be. Particularly Paul Feinbaum, who, like I said, lacks even an ounce of journalistic integrity. I don't know how he still has a job. He's ugly too. Like, I don't like, hey, how does he, like, he doesn't have a face for TV. Like, I don't get it. Like, what about him is redeeming?
He's just, you know, I think he, you know, he's one of those like guys down south who, you know, appeals to his audience and talks a lot about SEC football, and he sticks up for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And but I'll say this about Connor Stallions. I think it was so interesting. I mean, it's accepted, really, I think, throughout the entire college football landscape that sign stealing happens.
Oh, and every team does it.
Right. I think, you know, Mike Leach was famous with Arizona. I can't remember his name, but he would kind of make fun of Arizona State's head coach for always trying to steal Mike Leach's signs. We had, who was it? Petrino come out and say that Dabo. Yep. Or I
no, guess Vrabes. Not Vrabes. Brett Venables.
Okay. Yeah. The Clemson sideline was notorious sign stealers and that they were doing it all the time. And so that's accepted that that happens in the sport. The idea was that Michigan was doing it in illegal ways. And I think the idea is from some fans that they had everything known. They had, you know, all of these calls known. And also, like, I'll hear from people being like, you know, well, it's easy to do this when you know exactly what's happening. It's like, no, like, they ran the ball down Ohio State's throat, scored 42 points, and people would be like, yeah, well, they knew what the defense was doing. No? Okay, so we just completely have no idea what's going on. This was a scheme. This was an alleged scheme.
It was literally Ohio State was playing four down the entire game and had like a seven-man box.
Right.
It wasn't like they were, you know.
Had not nearly enough linebackers. But, and that was the thing. Like, they just could not. The linebackers they had out there were just not stopping the run, and you know Michigan was running it down their throat. The next year, big plays out the wazoo on offense.
And the crazy thing about that is that every single one of Ohio State's calls that they had, maybe outside of the second Cornelius Johnson touchdown, was like the right call.
Right,
and it just so happened that their guys didn't execute.
Right,
because hey, part of football is executing on the field. It's crazy, right. I know.
And then ultimately, you know, Michigan loses in the TCU game. And the report there was Ohio State was giving out, you know, dummy calls or whatever, you know, put TCU on alert that they were stealing
TCU
signals.
Known.
And then TCU was like, apparently was like, you know, running or, you know, putting out wrong signs to ultimately that fooled Michigan's defense. That was what I had seen, which would add up. You know, I mean, on some plays, it seemed like TCU had the perfect calls. And, you know, I don't know. Some of that is like, listen, you get the sign stealing right, you get it wrong sometimes. That's kind of the sign stealing game. So this whole argument of like they had everything down to a science the entire year, got every call right, is ludicrous. I mean, it's impossible to do it. And
I mean, in that TCU game, we're talking about like the final score is 51-45. Well, right. JJ threw two pick sixes. Yeah. Like, it's not like it was all... JJ threw two pick sixes, and then Michigan ran a cover zero blitz in which DJ Turner wasn't able to tackle Quentin Johnson.
Right.
Like, it's not like you know, TCU, you know, absolutely fooled Michigan. Like there was a reason they lost that game. It's because they played sloppy football. And they turned the ball over on the one-yard line with a fumble after the Roman Wilson overturned touchdown call. They run the fucking Philly special on the first drive.
Yep. Fourth and goal.
on fourth and goal instead of, you know, trying to actually, you know, be, you know, fit into their identity. Like, there was a lot of reasons Michigan lost it in you know, mostly sloppy football. And then, so Sherrone Moore coaches, beats Penn State pretty handily, runs for 228 or something like that, and then beats Maryland the next week, and then beats Ohio State for the third straight season. Listen, I think that this basic, and people are calling for vacated wins, and I'm like, brother, the last 3 weeks have vindicated Michigan. Like, they clearly didn't need,
right,
you know, it wasn't because of the signs that they were good. Like, they are just a good football team. They're well coached. They are disciplined. They know their scheme. They know how to run it, and they do it very well. Like they know their identity, which some teams might not. They play, i.e. Ohio State, still trying to figure out who they are as a program under Ryan Day. I just think that it's blown out of proportion, and if you're expecting vacated wins, unless this is like espionage and there was you know spies within organizations that were like actually handing out playbooks and whatnot, like, there's not going to be vacated wins. I don't think there's going to be a suspension from the NCAA because the Big Ten already decided that they were going to do it anyway in probably the most like childish manner possible. Right. You know, it was the entire conference was, you know, it was sick and tired of Michigan being the best team in the conference, and so they were crying to Tony Petitti, and Tony Petitti, being the new commissioner, was like, "Hey, yeah, I guess I'll suspend him so that I can make these other 13 people happy." Sad. Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Ohio State's a poverty program. Like, they're not a poverty program, but like there is, and I said it. There's an identity crisis at Ohio State. Like, I firmly believe that Ryan Day is an amazing head coach. You're 56-7 or something like that.
Something like ridiculous.
You've won 89% of your games. He's a great head coach. I don't think they know who they are, though. That's kind of the problem. It's like they had spent the weeks leading up to the Michigan game running the football, and Travion Henderson looked really good, and then he ran for like 17 yards against Michigan. And that Michigan run defense is one of the best in the country. So, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, it's not easy to run on them, but, like, they were not able to move the Michigan defensive line at all. At all. And the way that Michigan has played Ohio State was keep everything in front of you. Like, that's been the way that they've played. It was keep everything in front of you, make Ohio State drive down the field, because they had been so many their offense had been big play after big play. So what they did was they were like, we're not going to be Don Brown anymore and give you, you know, man-to-man coverage every single play, and you can just run crossers and score touchdowns. Like, to me, that was the biggest difference between, you know, 2017, the 2019, and now. It's like there is a new schematic change in the defense that has allowed this defense to play Ohio State better. And Ohio State hasn't been able to adapt to it. Why? Because they can't run the ball. Like, that is really what it comes down to. They don't have the offensive lineman to run the football against the Michigan defensive line. And their defense just is not physical enough. Just isn't.
Yeah. Ohio State's defense did the best job it's done in years.
Yes.
No doubt about that. This was a very close game. Michigan won. I think, you know, like, I heard, like, Big Ev from Barstool say that, like, it was a coin flip game. Right. I thought Michigan played better. I thought Michigan... Listen, Ohio State, I thought, played pretty well in this game. I mean, they had the Kyle McCord errors kind of in the first quarter. Not only the pick, like, he missed throws. He had Egbuka open on a couple of plays, and he just missed it.
Doesn't help that Egbuka dropped the very first pass on the third play of the game.
You know, it seemed like he was really struggling in some of the moments of consequence in the first quarter, and Michigan got out to a 14-3 lead, I believe. Or
14-3.
Yeah, yep. And that helped mightily. And then in that fourth quarter, Michigan was still able to run the football, and that hurt Ohio State as well. Obviously, the Blake Corum touchdown, that long drive that made Ohio State drive the length of the field, and only, you know, a minute or so to try and get a game winning touchdown, but ultimately ended by a game winning interception. But my takeaway was, listen, Ohio State played pretty well in this game and for a while had a chance to win. It was 17-17 in the fourth quarter, I believe. But, you know, at no point did the wheels come off or they completely unraveled, which they had done in the previous two renditions. They were absolutely in this game. I thought they played probably a B+. I didn't think they played perfect just because of the first quarter and that first 20 minutes of the game.
I would say B+, yeah.
And I thought maybe Michigan played at an A. But the bottom line is, from an overall, like, the previous couple of years, it felt like, man, you play this game 10 times, Michigan's winning 9. You know, simply because Michigan had the matchup and the players to just overpower Ohio State. I didn't feel like it was like that this year. I felt like Michigan, you know, in this game, played better and they beat Ohio State. And maybe that's how it is right now. Michigan is playing better than Ohio State in the game.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, Ohio State needs to get around. But as far as players and looking at each position and divvying it up, it's like, okay, Michigan had that huge quarterback advantage, and they did. Yep. And that, you know, played a part in the game. But it was like, man, running backs are as close to even as they've been in years. Wide receivers, huge advantage for Ohio State, and that showed up in the game. Defensively, holy cow, Ohio State's defense, and we've talked about this at the beginning of the year. Holy cow, what a unit that is. Every single position really has some playmakers stepping up. I think that linebacker, you know, Steel Chambers,
was tough.
Eichenberg.
Their front four was
physical.
Was tough. Very physical. The linebackers, and a lot of Tommy Eichenberg didn't have thumbs. Couldn't tackle. Like, it means it's tough. But, like, him and Steel Chambers are just not physical enough to play. And so whenever the Ohio State defensive line wasn't able to, you know, shed a block and stop for 2 yards, Michigan got 6 or 7.
Right.
Or even 8. It wasn't like there was really no in between. It was either 2 or they were getting like 6, 7.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't a 3 or 4 yard, 5 yard run in there for the most part.
Yeah. But I will say Ohio State did not have to sell out to stop the run like they did last year. And because of that, it seemed like defense was freed up a lot more and guys were making more plays. But Michigan played better, and they won the game. And, you know, say whatever you will, I think, you know, if this game's played 10 times, Michigan probably wins 6 or 7.
Yeah, I would agree. And like to the people saying it was a coin flip game, and there's a lot of them are citing yards and yards per play because of it. If Michigan goes for it instead of kicking the field goal and gets it, like Ohio State loses like 65 yards or something like that on that last drive. And so Michigan wins the yardage battle, and yards per play is closer. I don't know, because like they had, I think they in three plays they got all the way down to the 35-30 yard line, something like that. So I think, you know, that last drive skewed a little bit. But I think for Michigan, the problem with them and what Ohio State did so well is that Michigan loves to run on early downs. They haven't been as successful on it this year, and so they're playing third and long a lot. And you saw it against Iowa, and I think they were okay with that because they knew that the Iowa offense was literally the worst unit in college football. But it's just absolute ineptitude. But like, they've played in third and long a lot this year. They've been able to pick it up, which is, you know, which is great. Or they've been okay living in fourth down. You can't do that. You can't keep doing that. Nope. And that's kind of where my issues lie with that offense going forward. If, you know, when we talk about the college football playoff, but Auburn, Alabama, we also got to talk about.
Oh yeah,
because Auburn with the complete. If Auburn, you know, doesn't sell that game in the way that they did, like the college football playoff is Michigan, Washington, probably FSU, Texas,
right?
I mean, because Alabama still probably beats Georgia. Like, nothing changes about that game.
Yep.
And so you probably, like, I don't know if they put Georgia in, who lost the SEC championship game, to a 2-loss team over Florida State.
Right. It could have been interesting between them and Texas because there wouldn't have been like that element of like, you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
I guess the element is that Texas beat Alabama, Georgia didn't.
Yeah, but I guess like, yeah, there's still that common opponent thing, but it's like you don't have to put Georgia behind Alabama, and then you don't have to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get what
you're
saying.
Like that. But anyway, that game was unbelievable. Auburn played really well in that game.
Hugh Freeze, man.
Yeah, he and Auburn for a while, like Brian Harsin even, you know what I mean? Like had Auburn really shiesty against
honestly,
Alabama.
It's just Jordan Hare Stadium.
Yeah.
Did you see the stat that Alabama was 6-0 at home in that game? Auburn was 3-2. Against Alabama when they play at Jordan-Hare.
Just and a couple of those, like, it's a lot of close games.
And that's including the Bryce Young miracle right. drive in 21.
Just craziness. But they had him dead to rights. 4th and 26 or whatever. It was a drop snap that went way
past. I think
past.
It was 4th and 31.
Yeah, 4th and 31 maybe. And drop snap goes all the way past Milrow. He's scrambling to get on it. Causes them to go back. I think they had a penalty in there. It was just
It was a hold, and then it was the botch snap, and then it was, okay, it's 4th and 31. Surely they're not picking this up.
And wouldn't you know it, Auburn rushes two or three guys.
No, they rush two and have a spy.
Yeah, two guys have a spy. And by the way, the two guys rushing are playing quarterback contained. They're not at all trying to get after Milrow or even push the pocket.
Jalen Milrow had all to hit a throw.
And obviously, Milrow had, you know, crushed them with his legs throughout the game, of course. He's one of the most dynamic athletes in college football, let alone quarterbacks. And the thought was like, oh, he can absolutely not run just in case he picks this up. I think they were playing man up three deep like you see like Madden or anything like that. And I think the issue was the safety got pushed over towards the middle of the field, leaving a one-on-one in the back corner of the end zone. And not even like pushed all the way over, just towards like more of the middle of the end zone rather than all the way out to the left. So they should have had it, like they should have had two men over there. They absolutely messed it up.
He was in a cover two when he should have been in a quarter.
Yes. And they messed that up. Got Isaiah Bond one-on-one with a corner. He just made a play. Yep. You know, maybe slightly pushed off, but that's how it goes in the end zone at the last play of the game. Of course, it's going to happen. Whoever's more physical is going to win that ball. And he made a play, and that can happen when it's one-on-one. It shouldn't happen when there's eight guys in the end zone. Like that's inexcusable.
No, it should not.
I don't know how that's
the
how
offense
that happens.
Offense has five, you have eight. Like, what are we doing?
That was pretty unbelievable, but he was there. Good throw by Milrow, better catch, and Alabama won it. You also had people also, you know, gloss over this. You had a muffed punt by Auburn in the last 5 minutes of the game that surely helped them. And
Because I think at that point they were up by 10.
Yeah. Or no, they're up 3.
Was it up 3 at that point?
And then Alabama had the ball, and I think like stopped? That was – I think that was their that entire possession.
Was it really?
Like they struggled so much to get that yardage. Jeez. And I guess technically like probably backed up by the end of the fourth and 26 or 31. And ended up winning it.
I think there's some teach tape in that. If that ever happens in a situation and they throw it to the sideline, don't worry about the ball. Once the guy catches the football, carry him out of bounds.
Yeah,
like at that point, like he's so close to the sideline. If you can make it so that he can't get a foot in bounds or a single body, it doesn't matter if he catches it,
right?
Because he's got to get at least 1 foot in bounds. And exactly. So in that situation, if you like carry him out of bounds, you win the game.
Right.
Georgia, Alabama, SEC championship game. Alabama just physically dominated Georgia. Yeah. Like that was Alabama did to Georgia what Texas did to Alabama in week two. Like right. That's kind of what it was. It was just, and we've seen it against Georgia this year. They just don't have the guys on defense this year. They're just not.
But they've had years past.
They're not that good up front. I don't think this Georgia front seven is like top 20 this year.
Right.
Like it was, it's just wild to see, especially a unit that's been unbelievable the past two seasons. I think they lost the game for him. Carson Beck was fine. The offense was fine. But like when you have your, and they've been dealing with injuries all year long, but when you have your two best playmakers and Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers hurt for the game, less than, 100%, it's going to be tough to move the football. They haven't really been able to run the ball this year.
Yeah.
So this Georgia team was not, and that's kind of where I was like, with Georgia being one for most of the season, it was like we're just giving them benefit of the doubt because they won the last two national championships. I don't think at any point they were the best team this year.
Yeah. I did not think Georgia was, I think they struggled with Milroe.
Yep.
I don't think they were very physical, like you said, on either side of the football. And I think Alabama was absolutely the more motivated team. It looked like that. Or just played with a higher intensity. I'm sure Georgia wanted to win the SEC championship desperately. But when you're Alabama and probably had looked ahead a little bit in that Auburn game. And
I think there was a little bit of that from both sides, like Georgia against Georgia Tech. But
right. And obviously, hadn't gotten to that mountaintop in a couple of years now. I'm sure this game meant a ton to Alabama.
Well, they did it in 21.
Oh, yeah. And then lost.
They won in 20, they won in 21, and then they lost in the national championship in Georgia.
Yeesh. But yeah, they pulled it off. Played really well, I thought.
Yes, they did.
That was the
best game they've played all year.
Yeah. So props to Alabama. That line was really kind of tighter than I thought it would be. I thought it would be like Georgia -7.5. I don't know, but like 4.5 at game time.
The Vegas respects Alabama still. Yeah.
I think they're the most talented team in college football from a stat I saw the other day.
From the composite talent, probably.
Which is something for sure. So Milroe's really figured it out. He deserves a lot of credit. He's gone from, a guy that was benched in week whatever that was, 3, to pretty much a bona fide top 10 quarterback. Yep. And, you can't overemphasize enough his legs. He is incredibly fast. I kind of undersold that a little,
he's a freak athlete.
Right. Like I was like, he's like a fast quarterback. Like it is what it is. And it's like, no, he's like the fastest player on the field. And there are, and like, that is very rare at that position. I've mentioned Kyler a bunch in the past. It's that level of speed. It's Michael Vick. Like those guys were the fastest, shiftiest players on the field. Lamar Jackson is that way in a lot of senses. That's rare, and it obviously provides a huge advantage to Alabama. And he's also really thrown the ball a lot better. He made some very real throws, I thought, in the Georgia game that really helped that offense out and kind of took down the king of college football for the past 2 years. So that was a huge win, and it's crazy that Georgia's done. Like, I don't know. I kind of thought that they would still be in for some reason, only because, like, I don't think I really, like, went through the logic of, like, wait, no, they couldn't. But, like, I always just figured, like, oh, yeah, Georgia will be in. Like, they can lose this game. It is what it is. And no, they're out, and their national championship hopes are done. For the first time since, 2020, we'll have a new national champion. That is really cool. But if it's Alabama, it would kind of be bittersweet.
Listen,
more bitter.
I think that Michigan is still the best team in the country. I don't think Michigan has played their best game yet, which is wild to say, but it hasn't really come together for them in the passing game other than like the Purdue game. Like Purdue, it was like they actually pushed the field vertically and moved the ball with purpose through the air. Every other game, it seemed like they were just content running the football. Right. And their offensive line is not as good as it was last year, so they aren't – and they're banged up now. So they're not as capable of running the football as they were last year. But I think that if you ask me right now to rank the best four teams – like the four teams in the playoff right now, it would be Michigan, Texas, Alabama, Washington. But I think Washington is the worst possible matchup for Texas, and we talked about this a little bit. So, like, early prediction, I think Washington beats Texas. I think Michigan beats Alabama. I think that the Michigan-Alabama game is going to be sloppy. I think it's going to be – maybe not sloppy, but it's going to be lower scoring. It's going to be, you know, a very physical game. And I think Washington-Texas is going to be a little bit higher scoring. I think Texas's defense is going to get its, like, first real challenge since the Oklahoma game offensively. And Washington's offense is 10 times better. So what Texas has to do is go back and look at what Arizona State did. And I don't know if that was just, you know, a wacky game. Go look at what Washington State did to kind of limit what Michael Penix and that offense was able to do. Because I think they got the guys to do it up front, especially to create havoc. I mean, they got probably the best defensive line in college football this season. I'd say them and Michigan are 1-2.
That defensive tackle pairing
is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The push they're able to
Byron
get.
Murphy.
So, I think that, I don't know. I think we are going to get two very good games, which is fine. It's fine, right?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, say what you will about the College Football Playoff Committee, and we have, but these two matchups are unbelievable. And just by the point spreads alone, I'd love to know.
This is the lowest point spread in the semifinal that we've had. I'm 100% certain of that.
-1.5, -4. And that's probably generous. I saw one. I think McMurphy had it at 2.5 at one point on Saturday or Sunday or whatever when it came out. So two absolutely incredible matchups. I agree with everything you said about the Texas-Washington game. You've seen the Texas games where they've struggled throughout the year defensively, and it's been the high-powered passing offenses, whether it be Oklahoma with Dylan Gabriel, Alabama, that's kind of partially why their offense, you know, was so good, or their defense was so good. Milroe wasn't passing the ball very well. And so they were
able threw it to a Texas defender like three times.
Exactly. So, you know, Texas has had success against the really good running football teams because they have those two interior defensive linemen that are so incredibly good and really good linebacker play throughout the season as well. But when they go against Kansas State or when they go against Oklahoma and Will Howard threw for all of the yards that he did, they struggled and they gave up some points. But and Oklahoma State even, I think, kind of exposed some of that. Like, guys
Bowman
were open. You know what I mean?
Alan Bowman missed a couple.
Yeah,
just missed a couple.
But there were guys really open. And I think part of that, Ryan Watts has not been healthy in Texas. You know, and then Malik Muhammad goes down, the five-star freshman, for a little bit. And you're playing Terrence Brooks out there, who's just not a great cover corner. Texas can get exposed a little bit in that sense. And Oklahoma State did it a little. Like, they had guys open for sure. But if Texas can get healthy, and I think they can, they will be a better matchup for Washington. And by the way, like, we had this game last year, you know, a lot of people are forgetting about that, but that was the Alamo Bowl. Obviously, a completely different Texas team. The transfer additions that they've had.
Yes.
A.D. Mitchell, you know, comes to mind.
Who knew if he could just stay healthy, how good he would be?
Holy cow.
Wait, everybody knew that.
First or second round pick in the NFL draft, I think. And you know, maybe he comes back.
Probably second round pick. This wide receiver class is loaded.
Loaded.
It's crazy.
But anyway, I think Washington, that passing attack is very dangerous. And we saw what they were able to do against Oregon.
Speaking of playing best games, Washington played their best game against Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. They looked
like the better team.
They looked like the team that it was like the early season Washington team, where it was like, but they were playing lesser competition. It was like, is Washington really that good? And it was like on Saturday, it was like, or on Friday night, it was like, yes, this is one of the, you know, one of the better teams in the country. If they play like this, like their defense was playing well. They responded to the 21-0 run, and they were able to run the football. Like right. That had been kind of the missing pieces. Like, can they run the football? And they did it against a really good Oregon defense too. I was shocked by that.
And it's a lot of the times when you get those upsets, and people say it's crazy because Washington was undefeated and Oregon wasn't and ranked higher, but they were a 10-point underdog.
Yep.
It's, oh, okay, well, it was a fluky thing. No, they controlled that game, yeah. And they ran the ball out in that game. That's how they ended the game. They didn't give the ball back to Oregon with 20 yep. seconds left. Nope. Ran the ball straight down their throats. A couple of halfback tosses that
credit
really
to Kalen DeBoer.
A lot of
fantastic
success.
Coach.
Yeah, I mean, he had guys wide open in that game in so many different moments, too. So give Washington credit. And you know what? I think Michael Penix really missed some throws even
yes,
in the first half.
He did not play his A-plus game either.
No, but Washington still won that game going away. So that is a really, really tough team. We'll see what happens. But a couple of great matchups on New Year's Day.
Very, very excited for that. Well, thank you guys so much for watching. Hope you enjoyed. Catch you on the flip. See ya.